Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chagiga Daf Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the Mishnah. You'll find four lines from the top of Daf Tes. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance at the side where we have our Nosei, a topic heading, where we've written the following: Nitan lahakriv es korban hachagigo kol yemei horegel. One has an option, a possibility, of offering the Korban Chagiga any day of the holiday. Now, in our previous year, we mentioned that from the Torah standpoint, one day is designated for bringing the Chagiga. Now, as far as which one of the days of the holiday is that one day, so that, you can see, is an option that you have. You can choose which day. Obviously, the first day is the best day to bring it, but if you didn't bring it on the first day, you can bring it on any one other day. Also, Pirushim v'dugmois, we will see explanations and examples of that which is stated in the following pasuk: Lemeuvas lo yuchal liskoin, v'chisaron lo yuchal limonos. The gist of the pasuk, without getting into the examples yet, is that if you mess up, if you sin or mess up in a certain area, there are times that that mess up cannot be repaired, and the loss cannot be recovered. Now the Mishnah. Mishalo chog v'yomtov harishon shel chag. He who didn't bring the Korban Chagigah on the first day of the holiday, Chogeg es kol haregel, he has the rest of the holiday in which to bring it. We should point out, by the way, that the term Chag is a reference to the holiday of Sukkot. And that point is important here because the Mishnah goes on to say, V'yom tov ha'achron shel Chag. Not only throughout Chol HaMoed do you have the option of bringing the Korban Chagiga, but you can also bring your Sukkot Chagiga on the holiday of Shmini Atzeres. Yom Tov Acharon is a reference to Shmini Atzeres. Even though Shmini Atzeres has the characteristics of a separate holiday, nevertheless it serves as a makeup time for bringing the Chagiga of Sukkot. Ovar haregel v'lo chog, if the holiday passed and you did not bring your Korban Chagiga, eino chayav bachriso. You don't have any obligation to make it up. Al zeh ne'emar, regarding this, the pasuk says, me'uvas lo yuchal liskoin, v'chisaroin lo yuchal limonos. Something that's me'uvas is something that was contorted, something that was twisted out of shape. So something that's me'uvas lo yuchal liskon. In this case, he didn't he messed up in his bringing of the chagiga. He didn't bring it, so he can't repair it. Rabbi Shimon ben Menasseh Omer, eizo muvas sheno yochal lisokein. What is that which has been ruined that cannot be fixed? Ze habo al ha'erva v'hoilid mimeno mamzer. That's a case of someone who had relations with a forbidden woman, forbidden to him, a forbidden relative, and as a result of the intimacy, a mamzer, an illegitimate child, was born. So there you have a situation of something that was a sin that was done, a wrongful act, and its results are the birth of a mamzer. And you have a situation where that cannot be rectified. The Rashi says, "V'holid mamzer, Shehevi Psulin Bisrael, the result of the forbidden intimacy is those that are unqualified to be part of the nation of Israel, to marry into the nation of Israel, are now born. Vihei Zichron Lavono. And that creates a type of perpetual memory, reminder of the sin. Lefikoch ein avonosov nimchokim b'tshuva. Therefore, his sins cannot be erased through the act of penitence. We turn back to the Mishnah. Im tomar, you might say, begoinev v'gozel, that theft, whether it be done surreptitiously or openly, is an example of what we just quoted, muvas sheni yochel liskon. That's not true. Yochel hu lachziro v'yitaken. Theft is something that can be returned and thereby repair, undo the damage, the sin. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochoi omer, ein korin mu'uvas, the term mu'uvas is appropriate, elo lemi shoya mesukon betchilo v'nis aves. Something that was fit at the beginning and then went bad. V'ye ze, and what is an example of that? Ze Talmud Chochem HaPorish Min HaTorah. This is a reference to someone who was a Torah scholar, an observant Torah scholar, who then decided to leave the path of Torah, decided to lead a life of sin. Mino Hani Mili. The Gemara asks, from where do we know that the last day of Sukkot, or more accurately, the holiday of Shemini Atzeres, is available for Tashlumin, for making up the Korban Chagiga that you didn't bring up till that point. Before we continue, we draw your attention to the markings. On the side, we have our Nosei Mivne heading, the topic heading combined, in this case, with a structural note. The triangle represents Makoros. You see number one and number two, a number of lines later. These are Makoros, the Yom Tov Achron Shel Sukkis, Nami Nitan Letashlumin Lekorbanos HaChag Shel HaYechidim. That the last day of Sukkis is available as a makeup day for the private holiday-related korbanos that the individual has not brought till that point. So, once again, Menohani, maybe from where do we know this? Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yochanan quotes Rabbi Yishmael, saying, Ne'mar Atzeres b'shvi shel Pesach, Ne'mar Atzeres b'shmini shel Chag. The term Atzeres is stated with regard to the last day of Pesach, and the term Atzeres also appears in the context of the of Sukkot, the eighth day of Sukkot. Ma lahalon l'tashlumen, just like over there by Pesach, it is a reference to making up the holiday korbanos that you had not brought till that point. Afkan l'tashlumen, so too over here, it has reference to tashlumen. As you can see at this point in our markings, we have a bracketed section. If we were to skip the brackets momentarily, you see the second triangle where the Gemara reads V'tono Maisi Lo Mehocha. And the Tano in the following Brisa presents a source for Shmini Atzeres as being available for Tashlumen in his fashion. That's why we call that number two. In the meantime, in the bracketed section, the Gemara demonstrates that the word Atzeres is in fact available for making the Gzeira Shava. Maybe just a word about this idea. When the oral law, when the Torah Shebaal Peh makes a Gzeira Shava, comparing words or two topics by virtue of a similar word in the two topics, that word, if you want to have a solid Gezeira Shava, an effective word comparison, we have to demonstrate that the word is extra or in its own context would seemingly be unnecessary. And then the question is, why does the Torah insert that word where it didn't have to? answer to that is, in order for it to be available, we call in Hebrew mufne, for making the gezeirah shava. So that's our job now, in the brackets, to demonstrate that the gezeirah shava word, the word atzeres, is really available for the word comparison. And now the brackets. Mufne. The word atzeres is in fact extra. The e lav mufne. If you were to claim that it's not available, Iko lemifrach, we could challenge the comparison of the two topics, namely of trying to learn the eighth day of Sukkot from the way we treat the seventh day of Pesach as follows. We can challenge that. Ma l'shvi shel Pesach shekein eino choluk mishelafonov. The seventh day of Pesach is, we'll say, obviously available for making up the chagigah, or the personal sacrifices, the personal holiday sacrifices that were not brought to that point, because the seventh day of Pesach is not different. There's no distinction between it and the immediate preceding days. That's eino choluk mishelafonav. It's not distinguished or different from the previous days. So it's a continuum, and hence it serves as a makeup day. Toimar b'shmini shel chag shecholuk mishelafonav. Should you be able to apply the same approach to the eighth day of Sukkot, which we call Shmini Atzeres, which is distinguished from the days that preceded it? In fact, there are 6 points of distinction that we are not going to get into right now, but they're known by the abbreviation Pizar Kshav. And because of that, because the eighth day of Sukkot or Shmini Atzeres is different than the preceding days on 6 points, I wouldn't have assumed that it is available to be a makeup day for the basic Sukkot private korbanos. Therefore, the Gemara says, lie. Now, for us who are English speakers, this is a very interesting word. Lie means in truth. Afnuye mufne. The word atzeres is truly available. Michti, my atzeres. What is the basic translation of the word atzeres? Atzur, withheld, ba'asiyas melach, withheld from engaging in constructive or creative activity. Some people translate this as one is prohibited to do work, but melacha more accurately has to do with constructive or creative activity. So, atzeres, on a translation level, means that it's a day that you're prohibited in doing melacha. Well, Haksiv, it already says, lo sase melacha. The Torah already says regarding the eighth day of Sukkot that you cannot do melacha. Atzeres dekosav rachmono lomeli. Why does the Torah then have to repeat that idea through the word atzeres? Ela, shma mina, the fact that the word is present, even though you don't need it for its simple meaning, this shows me, lafnuye, it is available for making the gezeirah shava. So, just to repeat, the word atzeres you find by the seventh day of Pesach, and there, when you're dealing with the holiday of Pesach, it's clear that all 7 days of Pesach are available for bringing the holiday korban, the korban chagiga. So too, atzeres that you find on the eighth day of Sukkot, even though it's distinguished from the preceding days, it too is available for tashlumin. V'tana maisi lo mehocha. And in the Tana presents atzeres, or I should say presents a source for the eighth day of Sukkot as being available for tashlumin as follows. Desanya. V'chagoysim oisei chag l'ashem shivas yomim. Note, this is Pasuk Mem Aleph, and we've noted the Pasuk on the side, indicating that it's in the context of Sukkot, where the Pasuk reads, V'chagoysim oisei chag l'ashem shivas yomim. The 7 day holiday in the seventh month. The seventh month is the month of Tishrei, and of course that's the month in which Sukkot occurs. So now, in reading this pasuk v'chagoysem, I hope everyone sees that the chagiga, chag, chagiga, they're all from the same root. this pasuk is then a reference to the bringing of the korban chagig. It says you bring it for 7 days. Yochol yehi chogeg v'holeich kol shiva. Does that mean each day of Sukkot you bring a korban chagiga? Tamud lomar oisoi. Oso is a word indicating singular. Oisoi ata chogeg. 1 day of Sukkot you dedicate for bringing the chagiga. V'yata chogeg kol shiva. You don't bring it each day. This, by the way, is a drosha that we saw in our previous shiur on Daf Ches. Im kein lomo ne'emar shiva. Why then does the Torah speak about 7 days? If only 1 day is available for bringing the chagiga, then why does the Torah speak about 7 days? Answer: l'tashlumin, that each day is available as a makeup day if you didn't bring it at the beginning. Uminayin shim lo chog yom tov harishon shel chag. From where do we know that if someone didn't bring the chagiga on the first day of the holiday, shechogeg v'holeches kol haregel v'yom tov v'acharon, and here we dashed on the main point of this source, from where do we know that if you didn't bring it on the first day, you have the whole holiday, including Shmini Atzeres. Yom tov v'acharon means Shmini Atzeres, that it too is available as a makeup day. Talmud lomar, b'chodesh hashvi tochogu also. Then on the holiday in the 7th month, you are to practice the chagiga. E b'chodesh hashvi, if we have that as our source, yochliyei chogeg v'hoylech hachodesh kula, does that mean that whole 7th month, the whole month of Tishrei is available? Talmud lomar, oisoi. Again, the word appears a second time in the pasuk, and that's why you should take advantage of the pasuk we wrote on the side of the Gemara. This is a second appearance of the word oso, which is a limitation word. Oisoi atochogeg viatochogeg chutzolo. Only during the holiday do you have the option of bringing the korban chagiga, and not outside of the holiday. Before we continue in the Gemara, on the side we have a nosei topic heading where we've written machlokes Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yoshia, a controversy between the Amoraim, Rav Yochanan and Rav Hoshaya, in tashlumin l'rishon oy tashlumin ze loze. When we speak about makeup, so we have to first understand that when you speak about making something up, there was a point at which there was an obligation, and you didn't meet the obligation, so now you have a chance to make up the obligation. In order to speak in those terms, we have to decide when was the obligation that we are talking about. And if you were, let us say, not obligated on that particular day, so then you didn't miss the opportunity that you now have to make it up. So you would remain unobligated. That might sound a little convoluted, but hopefully through the Gemara we'll be able to clarify that. The Gemara goes on, Umay Tashlumen. What are we making up when we speak about the balance of the holiday available for making it up? Rabbi Yochanan Amar Tashlumen L'Rishon. It's a makeup of the first day. In other words, all the subsequent days that we say are available for replacing bringing that which you didn't bring is because you should have brought it on the first day. And if you didn't bring it on the first day, so you have the balance of the holiday in which to make it up. Rabbi Shai Omar Tashlumin Ze Lozeb. That each succeeding day of the holiday is in effect an opportunity to make up your obligation that you had on the preceding day of the holiday. So Rabbi Yochanan says what we're making up is the obligation of the first day, and Rabbi Hoshaya says what we're making up is the obligation that you had on each preceding day. My Binai, what is the difference between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Hoshaya in this analysis? Omer Rabbi Zera, Chigir b'yom rishon v'nispashit b'yom sheni iko binayu. If a person was lame on the first day of the holiday and he became healthy, his lameness disappeared on the second day of the holiday, would be a point of difference. needless to say, figer, someone who is lame, is exempt from the mitzvah of Aliyos HaRegel, of appearing in the Beis HaMikdash on the holiday. So let us say someone was lame. He was basically an exempt individual on the first day of the holiday. True, he got better on the second day. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Tashlumin L'Rishon, Rabbi Yochanan, who said that it's that Tashlumin is a makeup of one who didn't fulfill his obligation of the first day, and that's all that we're talking about. The focus is on the first day. Kevon Delo Chozi B'Rishon, since he wasn't fit on the first day, Lo Chozi B'Sheni, he's not going to be fit for bringing the sacrifice on any of the succeeding days either. Once again, we're talking about making up an obligation that you had. When did you have the obligation? So according to Rabbi Yochanan, only if you were in fact obligated on the first day, then we speak about you as requiring to make it up. But if you weren't obligated on the first day, there's nothing to make up. Rabbi Shai Omar, Tashlumin Zeh Lo Zeh, that each succeeding day is a makeup for the obligation that you had on the preceding day. Which basically means, Afagav, the Lochozi Barishon, even if you weren't obligated on the first day, Chozi Basheni, you were fit on the second day, you became healthy. And if you didn't bring the Korban on that second day, you have the balance of the holiday during which to bring it, to make it up. So we, according to Rabbi Shaya, we might be able to explain or formulate the following principle, that each day, in effect, recreates an initial obligation, thereby making each succeeding day a makeup of that obligation. Not so as far as Rabbi Yochanan was concerned. The Gemara asks, Umi Omer Rabbi Yochanan Hachi, does Rabbi Yochanan really say thusly? Namely, that only if you were obligated, then we can talk about your being expected to make it up. V'homar Chizkiya Nitmo B'yoim Mevi B'laylo Eino Mevi. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Af B'laylo Nami Mevi. We have to focus in this particular discussion on Shitas Rabbi Yochanan. But we do have two opinions, the opinion of Chizkiya and of Rabbi Yochanan, so let's get into a little bit of the background before we can proceed. Chizkiya and Rabbi Yochanan are talking about a person who had accepted upon himself Nazirus. Nazirus, one who abstains through a vow, a Nazirite vow, from drinking wine and defiling himself to the dead. If this basic Nazirus without any time addition is understood to be a 30-day period of abstention. During those 30 days, he must refrain from vine products and refrain from becoming defiled. If he does become defiled, so then he has to defile them. Of course, it means defilement to the dead. He takes a break, let's say, from his Nazirus. Whatever days that he counted as far as his 30-day Nazirus period is concerned, those are canceled. He now has to wait 7 days, 7 purification days, following which, on the 8th day, he brings sacrifices because of his ruining of the Nazirus. There are special Nazir Tome sacrifices that he brings. Then he starts the counting of a new Nazirus afterwards. Now, what we're focusing on is a situation where a person had become Tome, a Nazir had become Tome. He waited his 7 purification days, was anticipating bringing his Korbanos on the eighth day of those purification days and restarting his Nazirus. But lo and behold, he became Tomei again. Now, when did he become Tomei? So, Chizkiya speaks about a person becoming Tomei on day 8. If he became Tomei on day 8, day 8 was the day on which not only was he going to bring his sacrifices, but he was going to start a new Nazirus counting. Well, if he became Tomei on day 8, that was a day that was fit for the new Nazirus. So it's so we say that he's in effect violated a second Nazirus period. So therefore he has to bring a second set of sacrifices. If, however, he became Tomei on the night preceding the onset of the daytime hours of the eighth day, in other words, the night between day 7 and day 8, if he became Tomei then, he became defiled to the dead, at that point, he does not bring a new set of sacrifices. The original, it's considered, from our standpoint, it's considered as if it's just one continuum of defilement. It's not as if a second Nazirus has been defiled. Rabbi Yochanan, and as we said, this is the main feature or main point of emphasis in our discussion. Rabbi Yochanan af belaylo nami mevi. Even if he became tomei on that night, the night preceding the daytime of the eighth day, he has to bring a second set of korbanos. Even though the nighttime is not a time that's qualified for bringing the first set of sacrifices. So Rabbi Yochanan is telling me that even though you weren't qualified for bringing sacrifices at that point, you still have to make up, so to speak, a second set of a korbanos. We take a look at Rashi, right under the Gemara text, second line under the Gemara text, Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Hoyol V'tova L'tumoso Rishona, Erev Shimsho, since he waited the 7 purification days, immersed himself in the mikveh as is required, and the sun set. That represents the completion of the 7 days of purification. Nishayev B'korban, that is the point at which he becomes obligated in bringing the first set of sacrifices for his initial defilement of the Nazariteship. The afal pi she'ein laila roi l'korban, even though that nighttime period is not a time during which he's fit to bring the sacrifice, because sacrifices are offered only during daytime hours, and the first opportunity to bring the sacrifices would be on the eighth day. Nevertheless, according to Rabbi Yochanan, now we read this Rashi with a slight inaccuracy, but when Rashi says Nischayev B'Korban, means he's become obligated to bring a second Korban for the violation of a second Nazariteship, because that nighttime was already after the completion of the 7 initial purification days. And the main point, as we can see how we've emphasized this in our Rashi markings, that even though the nighttime is not a time that's fit for bringing the sacrifice, he nevertheless becomes obligated in bringing it. Almo afagav de lo roi le korban, even though you have a situation where he wasn't fit for bringing the korban, yesh lo tashlumen, there is a tashlumen. Tashlumen often is translated as makeup, but in this case, it represents he has now an obligation to make up a second set of sacrifices. So the main point to see from this question is that you see Rabbi Yochanan, in the case of the Nazir, is not so interested in his, he's not so concerned with the person being fit or able to bring sacrifices in order for us to nevertheless obligate him in bringing sacrifices. Therefore, back to our topic, if he was lame, let us say, on the first day of the holiday, and therefore not fit then, so what? If he could bring this, if he is fit on some subsequent day, the fact that he wasn't fit is not reason for saying that he nevertheless is not obligated to bring the sacrifice. In other words, the idea of making up is not then to be said as making up that which you had been actually obligated in. We can talk about someone making up the bringing of sacrifices even if he wasn't initially obligated in it. Omar Rabbi Yirmiya. We continue in the Gemara to a resolution. Rabbi Yirmiya says, Shaini Tuma, the case of the Nazir and his need to bring a second set of sacrifices as a result of defilement, that's different. The Yesh Lo Tashlumen B'Pesach Shaini, the concept of defilement is a concept that lends itself to making up even in cases where you weren't initially obligated, as we see in the case of Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni is a reference to the 14th of the month of Iyar. If a person, let us say, had been Tomei on the 14th of Nisan, the day when which we bring the Korban Pesach, the Torah has a special allowance for someone who was not obligated on the 14th of Nisan, nevertheless, to bring a Korban Pesach on the 14th of Iyar. So what do we see? In the realm of Tumah, there, even if you were not roy, you weren't fit, you nevertheless do have a makeup opportunity. That, however, applies to Tumah. It doesn't apply to other types of exemptions like you have regarding holidays, like lameness. Maskif lo Rapopo. Rapopo though challenges this. Ha nicha leman de Omar Pesach Sheni. This analysis, or I should say this answer given by Rabbi Yirmiya, is a good answer only according to the opinion that holds that Pesach, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, that says Pesach Sheni Tashlumin de Rishon Hu. That Pesach Sheni is, in effect, a makeup for someone who didn't do Pesach in the month of Nisan. That's called Rishon, the first opportunity. And if that being the case, if you say that Pesach Sheni is a makeup of Pesach Rishon, so then we can say that here we have a similar situation, and Tumah, then we say, is relegated to its unique realm. Similar situation to our case of holiday analysis, where we look at what was his status on the first day, and then we start analyzing the subsequent days and the way Pesach Sheni figures into the equation. And therefore we can say that Pesach Sheni is similar to our case of the holiday analysis, and since it's dealing with Tumah, so we say Shaini Tumah. Elo leman domar Sheni regel bifnei atzmahu. However, according to the opinion that Pesach Sheni is viewed as a separate holiday, so it's not coming as a make-up for someone regarding the first opportunity, Pesach Rishon. It's not a make-up, it's a separate holiday. So ma'iko lemeimar. Then what is there to say regarding Shitas Reb Yochanan and his opinion regarding the Nozir? Rashi at the top. Elamanda Maregel of Neatzmo, Viachshov, Ein Lo Litlos Tamos Reb Yochanan. At this point, then, we can't explain Reb Yochanan's Shita by the Nozir that became Tomei, Behoyel Viesh Lutuma Tashlumin Lesheni. Pesach Sheni then isn't parallel to our case. So the case of Pesach Sheni and the fellow who was Tomei on Pesach Rishon, according to this approach, that Pesach Sheni is a separate holiday, cannot be the basis of Rabbi Yochanan's din regarding the Nozir. So we're back to square one then. On the one hand, Rabbi Yochanan presents himself as saying, by the holiday issue, the Chigir B'Yom Rishon, that if he was Chigir Yom Rishon, then and even though he gets better on one of the subsequent days, there's no obligation to make up. Why? Because at the beginning he was not fit. And yet, when it comes to the Nazir, we see Rabbi Yochanan's opinion is that though he wasn't fit to bringing the Korbanos at that nighttime of these after the seventh day, if he becomes Tomei at that time, he becomes obligated in bringing a new set of Korbanos. Elo Omar Rav Popa, Kosovar Rabbi Yochanan, Lailo Eino Mechusar Zman. The nighttime is not considered lacking in time. What do we mean by that? We mentioned earlier that only the daytime is available, is qualified for the bringing of sacrifices. So the sacrifices could not have physically been brought of the nozir that became tameh on that seventh night. Technically, he could not bring the sacrifices. However, in halachic terms, in conceptual terms, that restriction is, we'll say, a mere technicality. Because in truth, Laila Eino Mechus Uzman, the nighttime is like the eighth day. It's like a new time period. And therefore, his becoming Tomei, that nighttime is considered his becoming Tomei, as if he became Tomei on the eighth day, which represents a new Nozir period. And that's why he's chayav in a new set of korbonos. So therefore, in that particular case, the tuma that's set in at night is not a preventive factor from obligating him in a new set of korbanos. However, someone was lame on the first day of the holiday. There was no chovas re'io whatsoever on that first day for him. Therefore, he has no makeup. So at this point then, based on Laila, Rabbi Yochanan holding Laila Eino Mechusar Zman, based on assuming that that's Rabbi Yochanan's position, we explain away the kasha, the difficulty that was raised from the case of the Nozir. The Gemara asks, Umi Yama Rabbi Yochanan Hochi? Does Rabbi Yochanan really say that Laila Eino Mechusar Zman, that the nighttime is not viewed as lacking and is rather viewed as the new day? The Omar Rabbi Yochanan. And here's another topic, a new topic of Tumah. This concerns a Zav. So just in general, a Zav is a male who had a certain type of emission. It's a phenomenon that we're not familiar with nowadays. It's called Ziva, a man's flow, and this emission can creates tuma. If he has two emissions, he becomes tomei for 7 days. If he has three emissions, not only is he tomei for 7 days, but he also has to bring a sacrifice at the end of the tuma period. That's called a zav godol. Now, we're going to speak about a fellow who had been Tomei as a Zav for 7 days. And he counted those 7 days. When we speak about him being Tomei for 7 days, those are 7 days during which he cannot have any Ziva appearance. And if he is able to go through 7 days, we call them seven clean, flowless days, he, on the eighth day, brings sacrifices. He brings his tumah sacrifices for the Zav tumah sacrifices. Now we have a fellow that was tomei, in fact, for 7 days. And lo and behold, after the seventh day, sundown of the seventh day, he has an emission, a Zav emission. Not only that, but he has one emission at night, and then two more on the next day. Does he have to bring a new set of sacrifices? Being that he completed the seven clean days, does that start his clock all over again? And if he becomes Tomei in this fashion, will he have to bring new sacrifices? That's by way of introduction. Now let's go into the case. The Gemara asks on the fourth line, after having heard that Rabbi Yochanan holds that the night is considered like the eighth day, the Gemara asks, "Umiyom Rabbi Yochanan, does he really say that?" The Omer Rabbi Yochanan, "Ro achas balayla v'shtayim bayom mevi, shtayim balayla v'achas bayom eino mevi." If he has another ziva sighting on the night following the seven clean days. We mentioned earlier, but we have to mention again, three sightings in one day will obligate him to bringing a new set of Zav, of Tumas Zav sacrifices. So he finished his 7 days, and then he saw one Ziva sighting at the night following the seventh day, and two more during the daytime of the eighth day. If that happens, he has to bring a new set of Tumah sacrifices, not only for the first period of Ziva, but now this constitutes a new period of Ziva. Maybe we should mention another detail. Would have been better had we mentioned it earlier. If a person was counting, let's say, his clean days, he didn't reach day 7. He reached, just on day 3 or day 4 or whatever, but in the middle of his clean day period, he had additional Ziva sightings. That would not obligate him in bringing a new set of sacrifices, because he hadn't reached a point where he can start being considered a non-tomei, a tohor person. So it's all just one long tumah period. However, here we're dealing with someone that finished 7 clean days. The sun set, and then nightfall set in. He sees a ziva sighting at night, and two more during the next day. We say he has to bring a new set of sacrifices. However, if he sees two at night, and one by day, Eino mevi. Now we've dashed underlined this Eino mevi. V'i salka daitoch Reb Yochanan lailo Eino mechusar zman. If it were so that Reb Yochanan holds that the nighttime is not considered lacking in time, but rather the night following the seventh day is considered as if it's part of the eighth day, then afilu shtayim balailo v'yachas bayom mevi. Then even in that case, we have two sightings during the night, and one more to make it the third sighting by day, it should be considered as if he had three sightings during the eighth day. The eighth day is a new time period for this person. So, if Reb Yochanan really holds that Laila Eino Mechusar Zman, so then why over here is Reb Yochanan saying Eino Mevi? The Gemara answers, Ki Ka'oma Reb Yochanan. When Reb Yochanan says that he doesn't have to bring the Divrei HaOmer Lailo Mechusar Zman, that's a statement with regard to the opinion, not his own opinion, but the other opinion, or that opinion that holds that Lailo Mechusar Zman. The Gemara asks, L'divrei Omer, according to the opinion that holds that Laila Mechusar Zman Pshita, then it's obvious that if he has two of the three sightings at night, and the night is Mechusar Zman, it's not considered the eighth day, it's not considered a new time period, so it's obvious that he doesn't bring a new set of sacrifices. So why does Reb Yochanan have to tell us something that's obvious? The Gemara answers, Reb Yochanan had two comments. The first comment that we had labeled above as Aleph is where you see a Chiddush. Shtayim bayom v'yachas balaylo itzdericho lei. Where he had one sighting at night and two, to complete the total of three. He had two sightings by day. The first one, however, was at the night leading up to that day. There I have to tell you this din of Reb Yochanan, that he does bring a new set of sacrifices, a new set of Tumah sacrifices. Salka Daita Chamina, without this, I would have thought Ke'atakafto Derav Shisha Brei Derav Idi. Now this is a very, very terse piece of Gemara, because what Gemara here is referring to is a discussion elsewhere between Rav Shisha and Rav Yosef, and Rashi fills in the background. But I would have thought, like the claim of Rav Shisha, that the first sighting was not at the Zman of Chiyuv. The Zman of Chiyuv, the obligation time for a new set of sacrifices, of Tumah sacrifices, is the eighth day. And now this first sighting was at night, and we're saying that this is within the opinion that holds Laila Mechusar Zman. So this nighttime was not part of the eighth day. So he didn't have three sightings during his new Tumah period. So I would have thought that since the first sighting was not at the Zman of the chiyuv of the new korban, he doesn't become classified as a three-time cider of ziva, and should not be obligated. Komash malon kid Rav Yosef. Therefore, Rav Yochanan teaches us, in accordance with Rav Yosef, that even though the first sighting was not at the time of the new korban obligation, it nevertheless attaches to those two subsequent sightings for to make a total of three. The logic behind that is explained at greater length in Rashi, but to keep matters simple for right now, that will suffice. So that after all is said and done, Rabbi Yochanan, with regard to Chigir b'yom Rishon v'nispashit b'yom Sheni, there is no Tashlumen, because all of them are Tashlumen the Rishon, and we speak about Tashlumen only for people that had been obligated initially. Then therefore, if someone wasn't obligated on the first day, he doesn't have any makeup to do. As far as Rabbi Yochanan, with regard to the din of the Nozir Tomei, who had finished the Tumah period and become Tomei again at night, and we see there that Rabbi Yochanan says he has to bring a new set of Nozir Korbonis, that's because Rav Yochanan holds that Laila Eino Mechusus Mani, he entered a new time period, a new period of obligation, which of course is in stark contrast to the person who was Chiger Biyom Rishon. And as far as Rabbi Yochanan's opinion with regard to the Zav, even though Rabbi Yochanan says Laila Eino Mechusus Zman, what Rabbi Yochanan had been featuring in his discussion concerning the Zav of Achas B'Laila and Shtayim B'Yom, he has to bring a Korban, and as opposed to Shtayim B'Laila and Achas B'Yom, he does not have to bring a Korban, even though Rabbi Yochanan himself holds Laila Eino Mechusus Zman. Nevertheless, his statement there was according to the opinion that Laila Mechusar Zman. And the Chiddush was regarding point Aleph that Rabbi Yochanan made, Ro Achas B'Laila Shtayim B'Yom. Nevertheless, even though Laila is Mechusar Zman, nevertheless there the Laila will mitstaref to the 2 days of, or the two sightings of the eighth day, to Mechayvim in a new set of Korbonas. We now continue with the Gemara. Ovar Horegel V'lo Chog Eino Chayov Bachriyuso. If the entire holiday passed and he had not yet brought his chagiga, he doesn't have any obligation to bring it, any further obligation. And regarding this, it says in the pasuk, Me'uvas lo yuchal liskon v'chisoron lo yuchal limonos. Once you lose the opportunity, you can't make it up. As we go on in the Gemara, a new marking appears, a diamond appears in under our Mivneh heading. You'll notice the heading, the diamond highlights Bar Hehe. Bar Hehe is an individual, it's a name of a person, and Tosfos says that some explain that this person was a convert and who lived at the time of, in this case of Hillel, you can see he lived at the time of Hillel, which is at the latter part of the second Beis HaMikdash period. And why does he have this rather unusual name, Bar Hehe? So, being that he is a ger, he is considered a descendant of Avram and Sarah, who were, in truth, the original first gerim, the first converts. And Avram had a name change. Originally it was called Avram without a he in it. The he was added to his name. And likewise, Sarah's name had been originally Sarai. It was changed to Sarah, where a he was put into her name. So you have Bar He. He is the son of Avram and Sarah, a convert, just like they were converts, people that had each one a he, the letter he added to their names. Tosfos adds, there's another gentleman that you find as well in the Mishnayos, and find him in Pirkei Avos, Ben Bagbag. The Bagbag is Beis Gimel. Beis Gimel numerically, Gematria, is the same as five or hey. We continue in the Gemara. Omer le Bar Hehe Lehillel. And actually, before we continue in the Gemara text, we have a topic heading under the Nosei on the side of our Gemara. We've written the following: Pirush Chilufi, an alternative explanation, lahadikotoni b'mishnah, an alternative to that which we saw in the Mishnah, la posuk v'chisor lo yuchal imonos. So now, Barhehe says to Hillel, hi, lahimonois, lahimalois mibayale, if the posuk is really describing our situation of someone who did not bring the chagiga at the beginning, he has the rest of the holiday to bring it, but if he doesn't, so he loses out. He loses out in filling up that which was lost, that which was absent. Then grammatically, the more appropriate word would have been lehi malos, mole, or lehi malos, mole means something full, to fill up something that was absent. But the pasuk doesn't use the word lehi malos, it uses the word lehi monos, to be counted with. So that, as far as Barhei is concerned, what does the pasuk really refer to when it says v'chisora lo yuchal lehi monos? It doesn't refer, as far as he is concerned, to someone who didn't bring the chagiga and the whole holiday passed without his bringing it. Elo ze she monuhu chaverov l'dvar mitzvah v'hu lo nimna imohem. This is a case of someone whose friends had joined together to perform a mitzvah, and he did not join up with them. And as a result, they went ahead and did the mitzvah, and he didn't do it. Tanyo nami hochi. And we have a Tanaic source that bears this out. Muvas lo yuchal iskon. That's a quote from the pasuk. A muva, something that was messed up, that was ruined, cannot be fixed. What is that a reference to? Zeshe bitel krishma shel shachros and krishma shel arvis. Someone who deliberately did not recite the kriya shma in the morning or the kriya shma in the evening. O shebitel tfila shel shachros or tfila shel arvis. Or he deliberately did not pray the Shemone Esrei of the morning or Shemone Esrei of the evening. If you deliberately allowed the time to pass and didn't pray, and then you had regrets later on, that doesn't help. You blew it. You lost it. That's Me'uvas Lo Yuchal Iskon. And the Pasuk says, V'chisor Lo Yuchal Limonos Ze Shenimnu Chaverov L'Dvar Mitzvah V'hu Lo Nimnu Imohem. So someone who was whose friends joined together and they said to him, come with us, and he said, no, I'm not going, and he didn't go with them, so he causes himself to lose out in the fulfillment of the mitzvah in his abstaining from being counted amongst or together with them. As we said, and hence the word lehimonos has to do with being counted along with others. Omar le barhehe lehilo. My dichtiv. Here we have on the side of our Gemara again a topic heading, Pirush haposuk b'malachi, where paragimel, the posuk in Malachi raises a certain question that will be featured in the Gemara. Then we'll see the answer. That pasuk that says v'shaftem urisem, and now we go into the Gemara where Barhei says till my dichtiv v'shaftem urisem bein tzadik l'rosha bein oyved elokim l'asher lo avado. And you will come back and see the difference between a tzadik, a righteous man, and a wicked man. The difference between a servant of the Almighty and someone who does not serve the Almighty. So now this pasuk presents an obvious redundancy. Hainu tzadik, hainu oved elokim. The pasuk refers to come and see the difference between a righteous person versus a wicked. Why does it go on to say the difference between an oved elokim? Is it not so that an oved elokim, a servant of God, is in fact himself a tzadik? Hainu rosha, hainu lasha, hainu asher lo avado. Likewise, the wicked person is someone who was not a servant of God. So is that also not a redundancy? Omar Le, so Hillel explains, Avodo v'lo Avodo, the term Oyved Elokim and Lo Avodo, Travayu Tzadiki Gemuri Ninu, they're both completely righteous individuals. So that the the pasuk in referring to an oivel elikim and a lo avado is not coming to contrast between the equivalent of a pious person and a wicked person, because both oivel elikim and lo avado in this pasuk are both righteous individuals. So that, what's the difference then? When the pasuk contrasts, come and see the difference between an oivel elikim and a lo avado, if they're both righteous, what's the difference? The einoi doime shayna pirkei mea pomim l'shayna pirkei mea v'yechon. However, you still can't compare someone who reviews his Torah learning 100 times versus someone who reviews his Torah learning 101 times. Well, someone who reviews his Torah learning 100 times is certainly deserving of the title pious. However, the person who did it a little extra, one more time, is considered an entire notch above him. The Gemara asks, and because of one time that he didn't review, the one extra time that he didn't review, you're calling him as one who didn't serve God? Yes. And he says, if that is perplexing, go look at the way people pay when they hire donkeys, chamor donkeys, you could say a taxi service, car service. Go see what happens in that market. Let's say you hire a donkey driver, asora parsi bezuzah. If you hire a donkey driver for 10 parsa, parsa is a distance. For our purposes, a 10-mile moving job. If you hire the donkey for 10 miles of transportation, you'll pay 1 zuz. Chadosar, one more mile, and instead of 10 parsi, chadosar parsi means 11 parsa. All of a sudden, the price jumps to twice the amount, betray Zuzi, because you went over the boundary by one more parsa, one more mile. You pay twice the amount. That's quite acceptable in commerce. So too, when it comes to avodas Hashem, you reviewed something 100 times, and the next guy reviewed it 101 times. That extra time puts him into a new league. Omar le Elio le Bar Hehe, the Amri law le Rebbe Lozer. Elio addresses Bar Hehe. Some versions have him addressing Rebbe Lozer. Mai dichtiv. And here too we have a topic introduction that in this Gemara we're going to see Anius hi hamido hatoivu shemotz kodesh baruch Yisrael. It's a sad statement, but nevertheless, the Almighty has found poverty to be the most attractive attribute for the Jewish people. And that the Gemara will point out, "Mai dichtiv hine tzrafticha v'lo b'kosef b'charticha b'kur oini." This pasuk is here to teach us melamed. It teaches us, the pasuk itself roughly translates, when you're dealing with purging silver from any dross, any foreign substances, you want in purification of silver, so a process called siruv takes place. So the pasuk says, "I have purified you, but not through silver. I have chosen you through the kiln of poverty." The Almighty sought out all the different positive attributes to superimpose on the Jewish people, and he found that the best situation for the Jewish people was poverty. This might, of course, be very shocking. How in the world can the all-loving God impose such a situation, which we generally regard as being quite negative? To be impoverished is not something that's sought out, and yet that is what the Kodesh Baruch Hu feels is the best thing for the Jewish people. So let us try to briefly explain this idea in simplistic terms. The Almighty is extremely desirous of a connection with His people. This is a recurring theme you find throughout the Shas, particularly in the case of prayer. You find this theme in Maseches Sukkah, and it's repeated elsewhere. I think possibly in Maseches Yevamos, a theme that states that the Almighty will in fact bring trials and tribulations on a person in order to motivate him to pray, because God seeks the prayers of the righteous. So it's this, it's a connection, it's a bond that the Almighty seeks out. For better or for worse, if you look over whether it be contemporary Jewish life and certainly over Jewish history, there have been neighborhoods, sections where the Jewish people lived, different countries. Where do you find greater piety, greater diligence in mitzvos and in prayer, in communities of opulence, or in communities of lacking, poor communities, poor countries? The historical facts will point unequivocally to the phenomenon of greater piety in those communities where there was indigence and poverty, much greater piety there than in communities of great wealth and opulence. We're not, chas v'sholom, claiming that if someone is well-to-do, he's not going to be observant, or he's not going to be diligent in his fulfillment of mitzvahs. But all in all, on a national basis, this, in fact, is a reality. The wise man would say, oh, if the Almighty is seeking a strong connection with each and every one of us, and things are going all right for me, and I have I'm a man of means, it would behoove me to rev up the motors of piety and choose to daven with greater greater sincerity, greater concentration when things are going well, so that he doesn't need this medium of increased piety, namely the medium of poverty or, heaven forbid, other kinds of suffering. Just a word to the wise, and possibly here we're revealing a great secret in Jewish practice. And of course, these kind of comments are comments that apply on the whole. Individual, there are of course individual tragedies, individual cases, which would be an exception to this, but that doesn't serve to distort the rule. We continue in the Gemara. Omar Shmuel v'Tamor of Yosef. Shmuel says, and some versions have Rav Yosef saying, Hainu dam rienshi. It's based on this that you have a common saying, Yoe aniusa liudoi ki barzo sumka lesus yechivra. Yoe means something, it's positive, it's fitting, becoming, that poverty is becoming of the Jewish people like a red ribbon or a red sash stretched out over a white horse. For those who appreciate beauty and good looks, apparently a red sash on a white horse is something that is very appealing, and that just as that is appealing, so too poverty is good for the Jewish people, as we explained. Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh Omer, A zehu muvas lo yuchal liskoin, zeh habal ha'erva, v'hoylid mimeno mamzer. Rav Shimon ben Manasseh in our Mishnah said, the example of the posuk of muvas lo yuchal liskoin, a contortion that cannot be repaired, that's a person who had intimacy with a forbidden relative, and there was born forth from that connection an illegitimate child. The purpose or the topic under discussion here is featured on the side under our no say, We're here, Liyashev Stira B'dvorav Shrub Shimon Nasi. We're here to resolve a seeming contradiction in Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh b'firusho al haposuk muvas lo yuchal iskon with regard to his interpretation of that posuk. So our Gemara continues, hoylid in, lo hoylid lo. From our Mishnah, you would say that when is it considered lo yuchal iskon, an aberration that cannot be rectified? That's a case where a child, an illegitimate child, was born. If an illegitimate child was not born, so it's not considered irreparable. Ah, v'hotanya, but do we not have the following Tanaic source? Rabbi Shimon ben Asi Yomer, Goinev Odom, person who steals, Efshu Shiachsu Gineva V'yisakein, he can return the theft, and he fixes the sin. Goizel Odom Efshu Shiachsu Gineva V'yisakein, if he openly stole, he can return the stolen item and fix his situation. Avol Habo Aleishes Ish, V'osro Labaylo, a man who has intimacy with a married woman, a woman married to another man, through that willing intimacy on the woman's part, that makes her forbidden to her actual lawful husband. So this man who had relations with the woman, forbidding her to her husband, nitrad min ha'olam v'hoylech lo, he has no more penitence in this world because he's done something that has no rectification. Rashi says ein lo refuah. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer ein. Now this, the balance of this source is less relevant to our discussion because we're focusing right now on the seeming contradiction in Rav Shimon ben Manasseh. Originally, Rav Shimon ben Manasseh indicated that it's only the birth of the illegitimate child that is considered an ivus shelo yuchal liskon, an aberration that cannot be rectified. However, from this presentation of Rav Shimon ben Manasseh, it seems to even extend to a case where there isn't an actual birth. It's the mere act of intimacy is enough for us to classify it as a lo yuchal liskon. And after the Tanaic source, we have the balance of the source in brackets. The Gemara says lo kashya. The Gemara resolves the contradiction in Rav Shimon ben Manasseh. That having been said, we'll continue now in the source. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer, ein Omer bakru gomol. The Torah does not require of us in seeking out an animal fit for a sacrifice to check out a camel to see if it's unblemished, or to check out a pig to see whether it's unblemished. Ela bakru tle, check out a sheep whether it's unblemished and hence fit for a sacrifice. So why is it that the Torah doesn't say check out a camel to see if it's unblemished? And the reason for that is that even if it were unblemished, it still wouldn't be fit. It's not fit at the outset. Unkosher animals, camels, pigs, they're not fit at the outset. Something that's not fit at the outset doesn't come under any scrutiny to begin with. It's only something that was fit at the outset that would come under scrutiny, an investigation to determine whether it's fit as a sacrifice or not, whether it's blemished or unblemished. Now, all of this, of course, is an analogy leading up to Rav Shimon bar Yochai's point. If we look in the Rashi, on the third line from the bottom, Ein Omer Bakru Gamal Zeh, check out this camel, the korba, to see if it's fit as a sacrifice. Klomar, Mishahu Me'uvas Mitchiloso Ein Zeh Me'uvas. Someone who was an aberration from the outset is not considered an ivus. The word me'uvas is a reference to something that was acceptable at one point, that was good at one point, and went bad. So all of this is in anticipation of explaining the pasuk me'uvas lo yuchal liskoin. So now the source goes on, v'ei zeh, and what is this? what this mashal, what is it coming to describe? Ze Talmud Chacham Shepirish Min HaTorah. This is the reference to a Torah scholar who departed from the Torah ways. Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish Omar, called Talmud Chacham Shepirish Min HaTorah, any Torah scholar that departed from the ways of Torah. Olof HaKosav Omer, regarding him, the Pasuk says, Ketzipor nodedes min kina, as a bird that flutters away from its nest, Kain ish noded mimakomo, so too is a person who flutters away from his proper place. The Omer, and the Pasuk also says, Ma motzu avoisechem bi'ovel ki rachaku me'aloi. The Almighty pleads and says, what failings did your forebears see in me that they chose to depart from me and adopt the ways of idolatry and Torah desecration? We just have to go back to the original reason we brought this entire source in. Again, we have the seeming contradiction in the Reb Shimon ben Menasio statements. Mu'uvas lo yichol iskon, as presented in our Mishnah, was a forbidden intimacy that resulted in the birth of an illegitimate child. And in this Brisa, Reb Shimon Menasio says, the forbidden intimacy in and of itself is considered the mu'uvas lo yichol iskon. The Gemara responds there isn't any contradiction, and in fact the Gemara will be giving several resolutions, and we've numbered them as we go along. Number one, lo kashya, kan b'achoso p'nuya, kan b'eishas ish. Eishas ish is a reference to a married woman, so in the case of the person having intimacy with a married woman, that's what the Brisa was referring to. The result is that even without the birth of an illegitimate child, there is an aberration that cannot be rectified. She has been rendered forbidden to her husband. However, if a man has intimacy with his sister, an example of another forbidden type of intimacy, and the sister is a single woman, so that intimacy is not considered an aberration of without rectification unless a child is born, unless an illegitimate child is born. Then, as we explained earlier, the result of that sin remains, and that constant reminder of the sin is what we are referring to here as something that cannot be erased. The Iboy Asema, another resolution, says, both our Mishnah and the Brisa are referring to a man having relations with a married woman, v'lo kashya. And still there is no contradiction. Kan, in our Mishnah, which we said only with the birth of a mamzer is it considered irreparable, that's more to things at the top of Daf Yud, ba'oinis. That's where the intimacy was done forcefully with the married woman. In such a case, she does not become usher to her husband. So that unfortunate result doesn't exist. So the fact that he did something wrong doesn't usher her on her husband. So that it's not considered a me'uvas lo yuchal iskon, because it was ba'oinis, it was a rape. Therefore, only if a child is born as a result would we say, here you have something that's irreparable. Kan Barotson. The Brisa featured a case where the woman wasn't raped. The married woman that had this extramarital intimacy, she willingly participated in it. That will usher her, that will forbid her to her husband, and even without the birth of a mamzer, we are calling that an amuvash that's lo yuchal iskon, it's irreparable damage. The Iboy Asema, a third approach, both the Mishnah and the Brisa are talking about a rape of a married woman. The Lokashi, and yet there's no contradiction or discrepancy in Rav Shimon Menasya. Kan b'eishes kohen, the Brisa which spoke about irreparable damage even without the birth of a mamzer, that's because the married woman had been married to a Kohen, and the halacha says that a woman married to a Kohen, even if she's raped, she becomes forbidden to her husband. A very sad and unfortunate result, but that's the will of Hashem. So there, in the Braisa, even without the birth of a mamzer, that's lo yuchal diskoin. It's an aberration that cannot be rectified. Kan b'eishas ishti, b'eishas Yisrael, the Mishnah that spoke about the aberration that cannot be rectified. True, we're talking about a rape, but the Mishnah spoke about a case where an illegitimate child, a mamzer, was born. We had mentioned earlier the idea of departing from Torah. So in that spirit, we continue with the following drasha. V'la yotze v'la bo ein shalom. And we look at Rashi, v'la yotze bo ein shalom. Mikrohu b'zachar, it's a posuk in Sefer Zechariah, v'darshu kan. And it's explained here, liyotze min haTorah, someone who leaves the Torah, ba lo ledvorim acherim, and comes to other things. So, as far as Rashi is concerned, even before we get into the Gemara's explanations, as far as Rashi is concerned, there's the simple understanding of the pasuk that one who was involved with Torah study and decides on his own, I've had enough of it, and I'm going to stop my Torah study and go pursue other things, he will not have peace. That's the simple reading of the pasuk. That one who was engaged in Torah study. Then we're not talking about how much. We're simply stating in general terms, someone who was engaged in Torah study and stops his Torah study, thinking that he's going to do better off by stopping his Torah study, he is making the mistake of his life. Ein shalom, he will have no peace. However, as we go on in the Gemara, this idea is extended to some rather interesting and possibly surprising results. Omar Rav, Kevon sheyotze odo midvar halacha ledvar mikro shuv ein loy shalom. We first look at Rashi. Sheyotze odo midvar halacha ledvar mikro shuv ein loy shalom sheein hora midvar mikro. Hora has to do with actual teachings that result in halachic practice, in knowing how to live as a Jew. So that if a person was involved in that area of Torah study, the study of halacha, and he stops that in order to pursue the study of the scriptures, shuvein lo shalom, he will have no peace. And why is that? Because he no longer has the ability, he loses the ability, or he no longer, through his current Torah study, is no longer learning about how to carry out halacha. Ushmuel Omar, Zeh Poresh Mitalmud Lemishna. Shmuel is even more, we'll say, severe, more restrictive. And this is a reference to someone who was engaged in the study of Talmud, of Gemara. And in the time of the Gemara did in fact represent final halacha, knowing how to paskin halacha. So one who leaves that and opts to pursue the study of Mishnah. The study of Mishnah, as important, as wonderful as it may be, nevertheless you cannot issue halachic rulings from Mishnayos. Rashi says, "Mitamud l'Mishnah, im shimeishes achachomim." The term "shimeishes achachomim" literally is he served the sages, but that term means, and Rashi is consistent throughout the Talmud as saying that refers to the study of Shas, the study of the Gemara. So, if someone was involved in shimeishes achachomim, shein medaktik in liteitam Mishnayos, the study of the Talmud involves detailed study of the Mishnah, giving reasons for the Mishnayos. In order to resolve seeming contradictions in the Mishnah, and give the reasons for why in one instance there is exemption, in one case there's obligation, some why in this case is there prohibition, why in this case is there allowance. This type of study is called Talmud Vim Yotzaman. If you stop that, and you redirected your strengths for say memorizing or to the girsa of the Mishnah. Girsa means the Mishnah text as it is, without the analysis. Shuv ein lo shalom bedvar hayra. He will not have any peace in the sense of attaining knowledge in how to actually carry out halacha. She'ein hayra nechino bedvar Mishnah. There isn't the possibility of, through the study of Mishnayos, a face value and arriving at final law. Shekama Mishnayos yesh she'ein divrei mechuvonim. There are many Mishnayos whose text is not accurate in and of itself. The Tirtzah B'nei Ashas and the Gemara itself explains Hocha B'mayaskinon, Chisuri Mechzura, where the Gemara qualifies the Mishnah and says that this Mishnah applies only under these circumstances, or the Mishnah text is deliberately terse, or Ha'amani Rebbe Ploni Hivein Aloch Gemosa, or many times the Gemara says that this particular Mishnah is in accordance with some type of minority opinion, or someone that we don't accept. Hence, Shmuel tells it that one who leaves the study of Talmud in order to study Mishnayos texts on their own will not have peace. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Afilu Mishas Lishas. Rashi says, Afilu Mishas Lishas. Shas is an abbreviation for Shisha Sidorim, but it's a reference to the Talmud that explains the Mishnayos. And the Rashi says, someone who leaves Mishas Yerushalmi Lishas Bavli, someone who was engaged in the study of the what's called the Jerusalem Talmud, the Talmud Eretz Yisrael, and chooses to learn the Shas of Bavel, Babylonian Talmud. Shu Omoik, it's deep. Kedamrinon b'Sanhedrin b'Machshach Moshivani k'meisi Olam z'Hashas shel Bavel. The Gemara in Sanhedrin explains that the type of logic and reasoning that you find in the Babylonian Talmud is sometimes it's very intricate. I'm not sure if I should use the word convoluted, but it's deep and difficult, and it's difficult to arrive at clear conclusions. And therefore, if you were studying the Yerushalmi, which is considered a simpler Talmudic text, and of course, what we're saying here, we have to keep in context that as far as at the time of Rashi, that was very much the case, where the Rishonim, at that time, the Talmud Yerushalmi was clearly understood to them. However, nowadays, that which we have as the Talmud Yerushalmi is actually very, very difficult to understand, and hence, it's quite likely that if someone had the choice, he might opt to put his emphasis in the Talmud Bavli over the Talmud Yerushalmi if the goal is to achieve clarity. That is a discussion in and of itself, something to be pursued at some other occasion. There is, however, an interesting point in the Tosfos at the top, Afilu Mishas Lishas. He quotes Rashi that says, Mishas Yerushalmi Lishas Bavli Kedepirush Rashi V'chein Amar B'Yerushalmi. And likewise it says, Be'chshachim Hoshivani K'meisolem Eilu Shas HaBavli V'chein. And you find also Rabbi Zera David Tzayim, Rabbi Zera, who once was in Bavel and came to Eretz Yisrael, where the style of learning Eretz Yisrael is different than the style of learning in Bavel. David Tzayim, he actually fasted to Lishtakach Minei Shas HaBavli in order for him to literally means in order for him to forget the learning that he did in Bavel, but it might very well mean in order for him to recalibrate himself for a different type of Talmud study, as was the case in Eretz Yisrael. And now Tosfos says, "Omiyu afilu ipcha." But this idea of aliyosuvah in shalom also applies in the opposite direction. This concept of switching from one to the other applies even in the opposite direction. If one, let us say, was studying the Shas Bavli, and he didn't achieve full clarity in that, and he, in the interim, he switches from that to the Yerushalmi, shemitoch kach lo yale biyodo halacha brura. Because of that, his switching in, say, in mid track to the other shas, he will find confusion in his studies, so that even before one is maven bozeh, it's according to the Tosfos, it's highly unadvisable to switch from one Talmud to another. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.